I am privileged. I'm privileged to be invited to speak to you here today. I'm privileged to be a Unitarian Universalist and a member of this fellowship. My list of privileges goes on. I'm educated. I've had a job whenever I wanted one since I was 12. In fact, I got most of my jobs by being asked if I wanted one. I'm married. I've had the privilege of spending over half a century with my wife, Nan. We have children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. I'm a citizen. I am solidly middle class with a home, two cars, and a dog. I am tall. If this one seems funny, go home and Google tallness and success. But this might be offset by the fact I don't have a full head of hair. Right? I am male, and I'm of Northern European descent, sometimes called Caucasian. Simply, I am white. I am truly privileged. What do we mean by privileged? Well, a simple definition is, quote unquote, having special rights or advantages or benefits that are given to some people and not to others. As you may have noticed in my list, some privileges are earned, such as my career as a teacher. For the most part, I earned the degree and the teaching certification, thus the job was possible. Some are the result of luck. I feel so lucky that Nan said yes. And some are conferred by birth. My gender, my height, my skin color. Now these privileges confirmed by birth, the unearned privileges, sometimes can become problematic. This is because we do not see them as privileges. We are taught not to recognize them as such. Peggy McIntosh, a Wellesley College scholar, began to understand this phenomenon. I quote from her paper, White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. She noticed men's, quote, I quote her, men's unwillingness to grant that they are overprivileged, even though they may grant that women are disadvantaged. They may say that they will work to improve women's status in the society, in the university, or in the curriculum, but they can't or won't support the idea of lessening men's. Denials, which amount to taboos, surround the subject of advantages which men gain from women's disadvantages, unquote. Her work led her to consider whether or not white privilege, which was linked to male privilege, was also denied and protected. She said, quote, as a white person, I realized that I had been taught about racism as something that puts others at a disadvantage, but had been taught not to see one of its corollary aspects, white privilege, which puts me at an advantage, unquote. Now she mentions race. And I think it's useful to understand where the concept of race comes from. It's a fairly modern concept developed in the last 200 years. It's pretty new. The ancients didn't consider skin color particularly important. Hippocrates, for example, considered geography and climate as factors that create appearance. And being uncultured or a barbarian was the marker of inferiority, and adopting the Greek culture would remove the barbarian status. One of the groupings of people during the medieval period centered on the descendants of the three sons of Noah, who were presumed to be the founders of a number of nations. It was during the 18th century, with the advance of the scientific method and the natural history, that naturalists began to try to classify human beings the way they were classifying animals and plants and everything else. Classification came into being. In the 19th century, two competing groups published their theories. For example, Louis Agassiz proposed that the races developed separately, were unequal, and came from different climatic regions like plants and animals. Darwin argued that all humans came from a single source. He noted the difficulty of determining race and gave as evidence the list of classifications developed by naturalists that ranged from one race to 63. Darwin felt that physical characteristics like skin color and facial features were superficial and had no utility for survival. But the concept of race continued with the argument that the races differed in innate abilities. Many white scientists, politicians, religious leaders took the position that the white race was superior to the colored inferior races. Then this argument was used to justify unequal treatment of people of color. So we have been taught that there are separate races and that they have separate characteristics that tend to make them unequal. As Peggy McIntosh states, quote, "My schooling followed the pattern that whites are taught to think of their lives as morally neutral, normative, and average, and also ideal. So that when we work to benefit others, this is seen as work which will allow them to be more like us." Unquote. An example. Many of us enjoy the movie A Christmas Story during the holiday season, right? It's a somewhat dark, sentimental journey into Christmas circa 1939. And we all enjoy the story of Ralphie and his quest for a BB gun. But are there any African-American characters in this film? If you look carefully, there are some in the background in Ralphie's class, and there's some in the background watching the Christmas parade, and there's one in the imaginary Black Bart's gang. But do you notice they do not intrude? They stay in their place. They do not disturb the white community. Now, this story takes place in Indiana, where strict housing laws kept people of color apart. This is a state in the 1920s, was one of the strongholds of the KKK, with over one-third of white men as members. But that truth does not intrude into this comfortable movie. I contrast that with the messages in one of the top films today about the African-American women mathematicians at NASA in the early 1960s, Hidden Figures. Haven't had a chance to see it yet, but Nan and I want to, definitely, and I would. It's gotten good reviews and everything. It's evidently an important film to see. So, in what other ways does white privilege manifest itself? One way to start to understand is to answer some questions. So I'm going to ask you some questions. You don't have to raise your hands. Are you white? Are you usually in groups where your skin color is dominant? If you use checks, credit cards, or cash, can you count on your skin not to work against the appearance of financial reliability? Can you do well in a challenging situation without being called a credit to your race? If you want to move, Can you purchase a home you can afford where you want to live? Can you turn on the television, look at the front page of the newspaper, and see people like you widely represented? Do your children or grandchildren get curriculum materials in school that testify that people like you exist and made civilization what it is? Can you go into a hair salon and find someone who can cut your hair? If you ask to see the person in charge, will he or she be like you? If you're pulled over for a traffic stop, can you be sure it isn't because of your color? Can you choose bandages that match your skin color? If you answered yes to most of these questions, it may be an indication of your level of privilege. Peggy McIntosh examined her own life and came up with 46 statements that described conditions the people of color she worked with could not count on most of the time. I recast some of them as the questions that you just heard. John Greenberg's website states that he is an award-winning public high school teacher in Seattle who designed a course called Citizenship and Social Justice, which the school system tried to eliminate because of the complaints of one white family who opposed racial dialogue in the classroom. Mr. Greenberg also writes for EverydayFeminism.com and lists 10 examples that personally demonstrate white privilege. I'd like to look closely at four of them. Okay. Number one, whites generally have a positive relationship with police. I know from personal experience that every time I've encountered the police, it has been polite and non-confrontational. Growing up, I was taught that police are the safe people. But it becomes obvious when watching the news and reading African American writers like James Baldwin, Malcolm X, Ta-Nehisi Coates, that there are many communities of color who do not have the same trust and positive relationships with police. And why would they feel that way? Well, we have an example, someone like Sandra Bland, an African-American woman from Illinois who was about to begin a new job at a local college, who was pulled over on July 10, 2015 in Waller County, Texas for an improper lane change. She was ordered from her car because she was uncooperative, wrestled to the ground, and arrested for assaulting a public official. Held in jail for 3 days, where she was found dead, hanged with a plastic garbage bag. Official ruling, a suicide. I was pulled over last year for an improper lane change at the corner of Griffin and 7th. The officer explained my violation, told me to be more careful in the future, and sent me on my way. Two, whites are favored by school authorities. I can't attest to this from personal experience because I never went to school with a person of color until college. And there were only two African American men, both basketball players, in attendance. This was only 30 miles from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, one of the most segregated cities in the United States. The schools I taught at had few students of color. In 24 years, I had two African American students and fewer than 10 Latino students act for me in plays. We embraced our minority students, I think, to show that we were not prejudiced. I'm not sure how the students felt being so isolated. But in Seattle, with an 8% African American population, black middle school students are nearly four times as likely to be suspended as white students. The website Think Progress states more than 15% of black students in Seattle were suspended from school at least one day in 2013, according to data from the nonprofit group Washington Appleseed. That compares to just over 3% of white students. Native Americans fared just as nearly as badly in saddle schools. Just under 15% of Native students were suspended. Asians were the one ethnic group suspended less often than white children. Most of them were not for obvious problems such as alcohol or drugs, but for other behavior. The Seattle schools placed a moratorium on out-of-school suspensions in late 2015 to investigate the disparity. And quote, a new government study on discipline in the nation's public schools shows just how very early the suspension gap is present. According to the report, black children make up 18% of preschoolers, but make up nearly half of all out-of-school suspensions. And we're talking about four-year-olds. It's a statement from Yellowstone Public Radio. Three. Whites have the privilege of attending segregated schools of affluence. I demonstrated that all the schools in my lifetime were segregated. This wasn't because we put minority students in separate schools. It's because the communities I live in had few minorities. I know that there were efforts in some of those communities to make sure none moved there. For example, in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, where I lived from 1952 to 1956, 7th through 10th grades, minorities were not welcome, and housing restrictions guaranteed that. I know that 10 miles away was Lake Como, where an enclave of black families lived. My dad repaired appliances for Sears Roebuck, and I went with him on some service calls there. And that was one of my life lessons, because my dad explained to me that they were good people. Life was tough, and I should never put them down. I have no idea where the children went to school, because they were not at Lake Geneva High. Before my junior year, we moved to Burlington, Wisconsin, 13 miles from Lake Geneva. A group of black singers put on an assembly at our high school. They were not allowed to stay in the local hotel. And one of my classmates' parents put them up overnight in their home. Meanwhile, 50 miles away in Milwaukee, there was a sizable minority community frozen out of housing in the surrounding suburbs, creating a series of apartheid school systems. Of course, the suburbs were affluent, as were the schools. They still are, while the Milwaukee schools suffer with less funding and have to deal with school choice laws. And this story continues to be repeated across our country. And would I be wrong to call Bozeman an affluent white school district? Four, whites have the privilege of learning about their race in school. I think most of us had the experience of learning in school about all the important white men who helped create this country. We also learned about all of our great white politicians, scientists, and religious leaders. In my experience, there were a few women thrown in for balance, but they were white too. Nan and I were trying to remember what important African-American men and women we knew about when we graduated from high school in the late 50s. Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver, I see you nodding your heads, they came pretty easily. Nat Turner, Sojourner Truth, a little harder. Do you know what the easy names were? Aunt Jemima, Little Black Sambo, Uncle Remus. Why weren't we able to name Benjamin Banneker, the astronomer, Phyllis Wheatley, the poet, Norbert Rollin, the inventor, Francis Harper, the poet and novelist, or Madam C.J. Walker, the first woman millionaire? She was selling African-American hair and cosmetic products. Could it be because they were African-American and not included in our curriculum? In 1971, one of the classes in my master's program covered the subject of minority oratory. I discovered an entire world I didn't know existed. And my major research paper was on Marcus Garvey, who in the 1920s led a Back to Africa movement, feeling that Americans of African descent would be more comfortable creating their own country in Africa. He even started his own steamship line to help the people travel. I went back to the classroom and I incorporated this newfound knowledge into my speech curriculum. But what kind of experience must minority children have in communities that don't support teaching that people of color are important? What about the children in Tucson, Arizona, where white politicians shut down the Tucson United School District's Mexican American Studies program? In Arizona. Jose de Barrio says it well, quote, "White privilege is your history being part of the core curriculum and mine being taught as an elective," unquote. And in many schools, ethnic studies is not even an elective. Mr. Greenberg's list goes on to illustrate that whites have the privilege of finding children's books that overwhelmingly represent them, have the privilege of soaking in media biased toward their race, have the privilege of escaping violent stereotypes associated with their race, have the privilege of playing the colorblind card, wiping the slate clean of centuries of racism, have the privilege of being insulated from the daily toll of racism, and at last have the privilege of living ignorant of the dire strait of racism today. Well, today I've tried to illustrate what the concept of white privilege is and to give examples of how it functions in our daily world. If we accept white privilege as obvious, the question is, what do we do about it? Well, one answer is, one, be aware. Two, change our way of looking at the world. And three, to adjust our actions accordingly. But we have to be aware that the dimensions of this problem are gigantic and intricately interwoven into the fabric of our society. I go back to Peggy McIntosh again, quoting, "The silences and denials surrounding privilege are the key political tool here. They keep the thinking about equality or equity incomplete, protecting unearned advantage and conferred dominance by making these taboo subjects. Most talk by whites about equal opportunity seems to me now to be about equal opportunity to try to get into a position of dominance while denying that systems of dominance exist," unquote. I'm willing, as a white male, to admit I have difficulty seeing where I have unearned privilege. I'm also, though, willing to admit that it exists and it has enhanced my life. Remember when I said that my teaching job was earned? Was it? I went to a white school, was accepted on scholarship to a white college, earned a license in a white state, and was hired by a white school district. How much of this happened easily to me because of my ability, and how much because I was white? So, is it possible for me to learn to recognize this built-in advantage and then work to expand it to those who are disadvantaged? All of us have to question ourselves and determine what to do. The marches a week ago served to show that women are willing to work to illuminate and eliminate male advantage. And I applaud the men who are marching with them. And like them, may we all be willing to take the next step and use this unearned power we all have been awarded to break the invisible system of white privilege. May it be so.